Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Sunday, December 29th, 2024. I'm Steven Jensen. Hope you had a great week and a great weekend. And it is officially the last episode of the Weekender for 2024. I'm looking forward to a big 2025 in the world of independent wrestling. And I appreciate all of y'all for the last year of support here on the Weekender, here on Fightful Select. And whether you're a new listener right here, right now, might be the first time you've ever heard this show, or you've been listening the last 6 years or anywhere in between, I very much appreciate y'all, and I hope that all of y'all have a very happy new year, and I hope you had a great holiday season as well. Holiday season is still ongoing right now for some religions as well, like Hanukkah is going on right now, for instance. So, you know, obviously, I hope everyone had a great holiday season, as I just mentioned. Personally, I enjoyed my vacation. I took a week off of work from the shoot job. I spent time with friends and family. I did a little more gambling. I'm not telling y'all to do that. I'm not endorsing or telling y'all to go gamble. Just saying, that's what I did for a few days, and I had a pretty good time, even though, you know, it was pretty up and down, we'll just put it that way. But I enjoyed having the week off of work, getting away to the mountains for a few days, spending time with family and friends. Also, last night was AEW World's End, so I got together with some buddies and watched that show. That was a good time. If you want my thoughts on AEW World's End, me and Jeremy will talk about that on the Spotlight. That's every Thursday morning, 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time on Fightful Overbooked. We did not have a show this past Thursday, which is very, very rare. We almost always, under pretty much every circumstance, have a show for y'all. But we wound up skipping this week because, you know, it was the day after Christmas. I was out of town. Jeremy had family stuff. So apologize for all of the watchers and listeners, you know, that, you know, enjoy the Spotlight. I hope that you guys don't... I'm sure you guys understand. Let's put it that way. I'm sure you guys understand why we had to take the week off. Although it is, once again, very, very, very rare for us to do that. But nonetheless, I'm looking forward to coming back on Thursday and talking about the world of wrestling. We'll talk about AEW, WWE, you know, more indie stuff, everything kind of in between. So once again, Spotlight and Fightful every Thursday morning, 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Fightful Overbooked. So. Yeah, as far as the topics for today's show, let's go through those first, and then I'm going to talk about something, you know, an unfortunate thing that happened this past week before we get into those topics. But so we're going to go ahead and go through the topics for the week, which is going to be NWA Samhain 2 Part 4. We got the results for that today. It's available on the NWA X channel. We got MLW Holiday Rush results, AAW Windy City Classic results, GCW Take Care results, NXT Level Up results for the final episode. It was the last episode of Level Up just took place. And if there's time at the end of the show, I'll probably throw out some random 2025 predictions, probably just based off a lot of the companies that I cover here on the Weekender. So maybe some like indie / GCW, MLW, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, maybe some kind of random predictions at the end of the show. And then I'm sure myself and Jeremy will talk 2025 predictions on the Spotlight for, you know, some of the other companies that I don't cover here on the Weekender. So that is the list of topics for today. As you may have noticed, I'm going to start off today with National Wrestling Alliance results, which is not the norm. I don't normally start off with NWA when we cover it, but this week it felt appropriate because, unfortunately, there was a big loss in the wrestling world this past week. Jeremy Dane Lehman, better known as Jax Dane, unfortunately passed on December 25th, you know, which is Christmas Day. So, obviously, our thoughts are with Jax Dane. It's pretty surreal, considering we literally covered Jax Dane's last match right here on the Weekender last week. He had that tag team match with Tim Storm, well, the former Tim Storm, Baron Von Storm now. But they had that match last week that we covered from Samhain 2, where Storm wasn't allowed to use the Iron Claw, and him and Dane got the win in the tag team match over Jake Dumas and Zion. So I'm a bit choked up even talking about this right now because it's so wild. Like, we've been covering this guy for years. He passed away reportedly from a heart attack that was from November, and the complications from that heart attack took his life on Christmas Day. So he was only 48 years old. Just really, really, really sad. And, you know, as far as what he accomplished in the world of wrestling, He did a lot. I mean, he really did a lot when he was, you know, when he was around, he was active. Like, you know, his most notable accomplishment would definitely be that he was the former National Wrestling Alliance World Heavyweight Champion. He defeated Tenzan back in August of 2015 to win that championship. He was previously the National Heavyweight Champion for the NWA and the North American Heavyweight Champion. He like consolidated both of those titles and also wound up becoming the World's Heavyweight Champion. He was the first ever NWA Grand Slam Champion, and he held the title for a little over a year before losing it to Tim Storm, who we were just talking about, who he's now tagging with as Baron Von Storm, or I should say was tagging with as Baron Von Storm. So that's it's a difficult thing to talk about because we were literally just covering his matches, and obviously NWA pre-tapes their shows, so it isn't like, you know, he was literally wrestling last week. It's just the way that this timing has happened, it's just, I mean, it's bad timing always, obviously, for something like this to happen. I think it's just hitting especially hard because this was so out of nowhere, because I had no idea that he had been dealing with any kind of medical concerns at all. Otherwise, I would have been wishing him well for weeks here on the show and on, you know, social media and really whatever we could have done. We maybe, you know, it just, yeah, it's a very, very, it's a huge bummer, a huge bummer. There, I don't know how else to say it. He also did work in Ring of Honor, Impact Wrestling, OVW, and he was very successful. Just never had like a big run in like the WWE or AEW, but he wrestled for a lot of different companies. Some of his, you know, most notable accomplishments, I mentioned the NWA stuff, but just to give him his credit here, we got NWA World Heavyweight Champion, NWA North American Heavyweight Champion, NWA National Heavyweight Champion, NWA World Tag Team Champion with Rob Conway, NWA Champion Series Tournament winner in 2021. He had the OVW Southern Tag Team titles twice with Crimson, who I'm sure a lot of y'all know from TNA/Impact. He was a Southeast Texas Heavyweight Champion, RCW Tag Team Champion. He was in the PWI 500 in 2016. As far as like the highest ranking he had was number 78 in the world out of 500. So this was a guy who, you know, once again, very accomplished. And this one also, just, I'll pull the curtain back. This one hits especially hard because I have a lot of friends that were very close with him. I mean, the way I found out about his passing was actually through Facebook, which is really rare for me. Usually when I see wrestling related stuff, it's usually through like randomly seeing it on X, and or maybe I see like a YouTube, you know, thumbnail pop up or something about something important. And this time it was actually me going through and seeing Jaden Newman and other wrestlers from like the Southeast. All, I first saw Jaden's post about it, but then I started seeing like all these other people, you know, posting on Facebook about Jack Stain passing. At first I didn't understand what was happening. At first I just saw pictures of like Jack Stain popping up, but it was just like memories of him, but I didn't know initially he had passed. And I started putting two and two together, and then I started seeing like the overwhelming, you know, flood of like comments and you know, posts after confirming that he had passed away. And it was just, it's a big shocker. And once again, I, you know, nothing but, you know, whatever we can do, positive thoughts, positive energy, prayers, like whatever you believe in, you know, put that energy towards the family of Jack Stain during these times, because, I mean, you're only 48 years old, you know what I mean? So rest in peace, and this episode of The Weekender is dedicated to him. So as far as the actual topics and results go for today, we are going to start with NWA, pretty much as like a respect to Jack Stain, because he, of course, was an active member of the NWA roster and one of the brightest spots of the NWA roster. Somebody that I didn't highlight probably enough here on this show, but somebody I always enjoyed watching his work. I enjoyed covering his work, and he always had really solid matches, and somebody who had, you know, it's very easy to rip on the NWA storylines. I get it. You know, the show can be difficult to watch. I understand a lot of people feel about the NWA, but someone like Jack Stain was going out there and just putting in work, putting in solid work consistently. No BS, just going in there and putting on solid matches, doing the best he could with whatever storyline or team he was in. So we're going to start off today with results for NWA Samoan 2 Part 4. This show was taped on October 26th, 2024, and aired on December 24th, 2024. So this wound up actually airing one night before Jack Stane passed, but was taped, you know, a couple months prior. This is available, once again, completely for free on the National Wrestling Alliance X account, formerly Twitter. It's from the WEDU Studios in Tampa, Florida, and here are the results. We had three matches on this one. First match was Kenzie Page defending the NWA World Women's Championship against Tiffany Nieves. Kenzie Page gets the win when she reverses a soul food attempt, which I call soul food or eat defeat. Y'all know the move, I'm sure, where you drop down with like your foot on someone's face. We've seen a lot of people use the move. I think Chuck Taylor is somebody that I remember seeing use it really early on. Enzo Amore used it as his finisher, so on and so forth. Kenzie Page reverses that move, that attempt by Nieves, and reverses it right into a Kenzie cutter, her version of a diamond cutter for the 1-2-3. After that, we had the Temple of Doom, spelled D-U-U-M, which are making their NWA tag team debut here on this show. It's the team of Beastman and Stone Rockwell. They defeat the team of Fabu, Andre, and Tony Donati, which is the Heavenly Butterflies. The finish of this one was the finisher for Temple of Doom is called Pitfall, which is basically, it's like a double team backpack senton. That's what I wrote down. Do your best to imagining to kind of see what I'm saying there. You basically have one member holding the other. I can't remember off the top of my head who held who, but for the sake of picturing this, I believe it was Beastman picking up Stone Rockwell, like in a backpack, and then jumping down into a senton and pinning their opponents for the 1-2-3. Once again, successful NWA tag team debut for the Temple of Doom. And then the main event of the show, we had the NWA World Junior Heavyweight title on the line. This was a no limits match, so basically a no DQ match, where Alex Taylor defends and retains over Jack Cartwheel. Of course, Jack Cartwheel has been WWE ID'd, so continue to keep your eyes on him. Alex Taylor gets the win here when basically the way the finish goes is Jack goes off the top rope with a shooting star press, and it looks like he's going to pin Taylor for the 1-2-3, but the actual pinfall, the way that he's being pinned, causes Taylor's feet to actually hit the bottom rope, so it breaks the pin. That leads to Alex Taylor going for a German suplex, which Jack Cartwheel backflips out of, but then Cartwheel's got a head of steam, runs towards Taylor, and gets thrown headfirst into a chair that was set up in the turnbuckles. And then Alex Taylor follows up with, once again, a lot of names for this move. I wrote down landslide. I also like to call it the Metal League driver, but it's basically the landslide is what Nakamura called it. Might still call it that. I don't know how often he uses this move still, but basically like a fireman's carry into a Michinoku driver for the 1-2-3. I also, like I said, I call it the Metal League driver because Grand Metal League used it in the WWE and he was really successful in like the Cruiserweight Classic with that move and stuff. So anyways, Alex Taylor retains the junior heavyweight title over Jack Cartwheel in the main event, and that is NWA Samoan 2 Part 4. You can watch it, once again, completely for free on the National Wrestling Alliance X account. Moving on, you got results for MLW Holiday Rush. It is available completely for free on the Major League Wrestling YouTube channel. This was taped on December 5th, but aired on December 24th. Took place from the Melrose Ballroom in New York City, New York. We have done the spoilers for this show already, but now that it is actually aired, I'm going to tell you what actually wound up happening, how it came across, and what the actual finishes of these matches were. So starting off, we had a dark match, which unfortunately I don't have the finish of that one because it didn't air. But we had Ariel Dominguez over D'Angelo in a dark match. The actual show opened up with Jinai Kai over Tiffany Avatar. And this one was so fast. It was literally the bell rings. Kai hits a liver kick to Avatar. Avatar crumbles to the mat. and Kai just kind of like kicks her while she's down, and the referee stops it. Cage match has this at 13 seconds. It might technically even be faster than that, but that's that. It was a non-title match, and Kai's featherweight championship was not on the line, but I don't really know why it wasn't, because I mean, this would just be another successful title defense to rack up on that, but you know, that's nitpicking. You know, Jinai Kai continues to remain looking really strong and dominant, and you know, good for her. I think she deserves a good push, and she's been very talented for a long time. I've watched her on the indies for quite a while, saw her live in Atlanta many times at companies like Battle Slam. So yeah, interested to see kind of where they keep going with her and Contra and all that kind of stuff. After that, speaking of Contra, we had Minoru Suzuki over Akira. The finish of this one was Suzuki doing a liver kick from behind Akira, so kind of similar to the liver kick we saw from Kai, only Suzuki executes this from behind Akira, and that leads to a rear naked choke. So it's like a liver kick right into a rear naked choke, and then he converts the rear naked choke over into a stalling got style pile driver, which is of course a signature combination and finishing sequence for Minoru Suzuki, Murder Grandpa. And once again, I mentioned it was a stalling got style pile driver. So he picks Akira up and holds him there for like, you know, 30 seconds or whatever, and then drops him on his head. And that's that. 1, 2, 3, Suzuki wins. After that, we had Matt Riddle over Brett Ryan Gosselin. And congratulations to BRG for recently re-signing with MLW. I think I've already congratulated him and said that on the show, but if I haven't, congratulations, because it just happened within like the last few weeks. Gosselin, of course, a member of the Rogue Horsemen. He had the Andersons in his corner during this one, Brock and C.W. Anderson. Basically, the way that this match ends is the Andersons are on the outside, and they are caught by the referee while they're trying to attack Riddle on the outside. Alex Kane comes out during the distraction, and of course, Alex Kane in storyline had been fired by acting general manager, or whatever you want to call him at the time, Eric Bischoff, when Eric Bischoff was there for his MLW event, like, you know, just a few weeks ago. Part of that show, and one of the big stories, was Eric Bischoff firing Alex Kane. So technically fired Alex Kane comes out, and he grabs BRG by the head and like kind of like racks him by the throat on the top rope. And that's all happening while the referee is distracted, trying to like, you know, get the Andersons from, you know, away from attacking. And that leads right into Riddle hitting the Bro Stone on BRG and pinning him for the 1, 2, 3. After that, we had Teton. I know I'm always so bad about saying these guys' names, by the way. I know I usually call them Titan and Magnus. It's because I feel like I sound like kind of a moron, like trying to pronounce something that you know I'm not good at pronouncing, if that makes sense. I usually say Titan and Magnus for the sake of trying to be accurate. Teton and Magnus. Okay, so we had Teton over Magnus in the next match. The finish here was, I wrote down Dragon Tamer because that's basically what it was. Teton does the Daniel Garcia style Dragon Tamer, which is like a high angle, extra torque type of version of a sharpshooter slash, you know, Scorpion Deathlock, whatever you want to call it. And he forces Magnus to tap out. After that, we had Filthy Tom Lawler over Timothy Thatcher. The finish of this one was Filthy Tom hitting I call it the top rope flying hendo. The reason I call it that, Dan Henderson in the UFC famously knocked out Michael Bisping at UFC 100 with a very similar type move. Obviously, he wasn't doing off the top rope, but hendo Dan Henderson, who's one of my favorite fighters of all time. I love Michael Bisping as well, but at the time, I did not like Bisping. Over time, I became a Bisping fan, but at the time of this knockout, I was super anti-Bisping. And I've always been very pro Dan Henderson. One of my favorite fighters of all time. His run in Pride FC, especially, where he was a 2-weight class champion, was just legendary. Then he came to the UFC after he had been in the UFC prior, came back, had back-to-back title shots, which were unsuccessful, unfortunately, but you know, legendary fights against Rampage Jackson and Anderson Silva. Wound up leaving the UFC, went to Strikeforce, won their light heavyweight championship, came back to the UFC, almost beat Michael Bisping in a rematch all those years later in his retirement fight. I mean, I could talk about Dan Henderson all day, but the reason I'm even talking about Dan Henderson is because Filthy Tom is doing his like grounded forearm. So That's the best way I can describe this move, if you even know what I'm talking about. He does it off the top rope, the flying Dan Henderson forearm, and then he uses that to, like, pretty much float right into a rear naked choke. And Timothy Thatcher, to his credit, does not tap out, but he does pass out to the choke, and the referee calls it. So Filthy Tom defeats Timothy Thatcher by referee's decision, technical submission. And after the match, St. Laurent comes out. He's on the entrance ramp. Of course, he has a lot of history with Tom Lawler, and they've been, you know, building a feud with, you know, their history, and of course, St. Laurent's allegiance now to Dijak. Speaking of Dijak, he comes out to the ring and attacks Filthy Tom while St. Laurent is on the entrance ramp, but Filthy Tom actually fights him off. And the main event of the show, we had the MLW World Heavyweight Championship on the line. Satoshi Kojima, who had Akamura in his corner, defends and retains the championship over Ultimo Guerrero. Towards the end of the match, kind of the finishing sequence, we had Ultimo Guerrero hits a lariat onto Kojima, but Kojima kicks out at two. Ultimo hits the ropes to go for another running lariat, but runs right into a lariato by Kojima, which of course is his finisher, his trademark. Kojima hits the lariato and pins Guerrero 1-2-3 to retain the title. Throughout the match and after the match, we saw Matt Riddle in the back watching the match from a monitor. It is official that on January 11th at Kings of Coliseum, it will be Kojima versus Riddle for the MLW World Championship. And I've been saying it for months. I feel like it's pretty obvious. I feel like that's where Riddle is going to win the MLW Heavyweight Championship. I feel like it's just totally inevitable. I got to give Kojima a ton of credit, by the way, for this title run. When Alex Kane lost the championship to him, I thought it was not a smart move. And to be honest, I don't think that they necessarily needed to even do that. Like, I think Alex Kane really could have been the champion this whole time, and they could have built bigger to him and, you know, Riddle, and Riddle maybe eventually beats Alex Kane for the belt. And you also have Mads Cruel Kruger in the background looming, who is kind of also, kind of has claimed number one contendership as well. You know, but Kojima, he's been putting on good matches. Like, you know, he's obviously up there in age. He's got a ton of miles on him. He's been around the business forever. But he does have a lot of, you know, goodwill with the fan base. He goes out there and works his ass off in singles matches and tag team matches with Akamura. I mean, the tag titles that they've had multiple times with MLW, obviously, as well. So it's like, you know, I gotta give Kojima a lot of credit for this title reign. Although it's always felt like he was going to be like a placeholder for a Cruel or a Matt Riddle, he's definitely been more than just a placeholder, because he's held the title for a while now. He's also one of the only people, maybe the only one, who's held it multiple times. But once again, I think it's inevitable that Matt Riddle is going to be the next MLW World Heavyweight Champion, and eventually he'll probably lose the belt to Cruel. I'll do like a 2025 prediction right now for MLW. I think that Cruel will be the one to beat Matt Riddle for that championship. I don't know how long it's going to take, but with Cruel recently signing a deal with MLW, he has their commitment and vice versa. I felt like he was going to win the championship a while back at Center Stage in Atlanta. It didn't wind up happening, but they've also teased Cruel and Riddle going at it as well. The seeds have been planted. So that's going to be a 2025 prediction right here for me, is that Matt Riddle is going to win the MLW Heavyweight Championship from Kojima on January 11th at Kings of Coliseum. That'll be for free on the MLW YouTube channel, by the way. And then sometime, you know, in the near future, I'll put it this way. I think 2025 will probably end with Cruel as the MLW champion. I don't think he's going to wait until the end of the year to win the title, but I think he'll win the title probably by mid-year and hold it till at least the end of 2025. So there's some predictions for you. Let's do a 2025 prediction for NWA also while we're at it. NWA. Let's see. I think Kenzie Page should hold the women's championship through 2025. And have a run similar to what we saw from Camille, as far as, you know, really long-term champion. I don't see any reason for her to lose that title anytime soon. There's, you know, some good women in the NWA, don't get me wrong, but I think that Kenzie it kind of stands above everyone right now, regardless of gender. I think that, I've said it 1,000 times, I know I sound like a broken record on the show sometimes, but I really think that she's the most valuable asset that the company currently has. As far as, like, the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship, by this time next year, who do I think will actually be the champion? That's a really good question. I'll say this. I think that in 2025, by the end of the year, whoever is the NWA World's Heavyweight Champion is someone who's not even currently in the company right now. I don't know who that's going to be, but I'm just going to make that prediction, that it's going to be someone who's not even currently on the roster or entwined in any of these stories. So yeah, we'll see. Things are always constantly changing with the National Wrestling Alliance, but I could see Latimer holding the belt for a really long time also, though. I mean, I hope he does personally, but I feel like someone from the outside will come in to NWA sometime in 2025 and just get like a massive push towards the championship. But also it's very possible that like they could do like a Tim Storm, like, snaps out of the Baron Von Storm thing and, like, maybe kind of avenges for, like, you know, in, like, the memory of Jack Stane or something. Like, that'd be kind of nice to see, I guess. But I don't necessarily think they should go back to Tim Storm as the World Heavyweight Champion. So, anyways, we'll move on to the next set of results. But figured I'd throw some random predictions for next year out there for y'all. Next set of results we got here is AAW. This is AEW Windy City Classic from the Berwyn Eagles Club in Berwyn, Illinois. This event happened on the 28th, so last night. This is live, available on highspots.com. And, sorry, I was getting my computer froze for there for a second. Anyways, this is AEW Professional Wrestling Redefined, and these are the results for Windy City Classic. First match we had was Rafael Quintero and Solomon Tupu over Ace Perry and Shane Boucher. Finish of this one was Rafael hitting a really nice like top rope barrel roll to the outside, hitting both Shane and Ace. And then back in the ring, Tupu hits a burning hammer. And gets the pin for the team for the 1-2-3. After that, we had Ren Jones over Shane Hollister. Unfortunately for this one, there. So I did have a little bit of streaming issue with this, full disclosure. I don't necessarily want to put it on High Spots. I don't know if it was my internet, because it doesn't just happen with High Spots. Occasionally, when I'm watching IWTV or Triller TV Plus, like, sometimes the match will literally freeze like right around the finish, and no matter how many times I try to buffer it or restart it, I just can't see exactly what happened. So that's unfortunately what happened here. I know Ren Jones defeated Shane Hollister, but I did not see the actual finish. After that, we had Joey Avalon over Aaron Roberts. The finish of this one. Oh, by the way, Aaron Roberts is a WWE ID'd, if you didn't know. So big win for Joey Avalon to defeat Aaron Roberts. The finish of this one was a sick kick by Avalon for the 1-2-3. After that, we had the Bravo family, the team of Sean Logan and Bruce Hamilton over Victor Analog. The finish of this one was... Oh, this was another one where I didn't see... This match only lasted like a couple minutes, but it led into the next match, which was like literally 6 minutes. So I know this sounds confusing to everyone, but it was like... It was like a literally like a 2 or 3 minute match, this tag team match, and then a literal 6 second match right afterwards where Mike Hartenbauer defeats Mario Peruta. And literally, Hartenbauer ducks a clothesline from Mario and then hits him with his own clothesline and pins him. Literally 6 seconds. Didn't have any more streaming issues beyond that. I got everything else right here in front of me. So the next match we had was Stallion Rogers over Isaiah Moore. Stallion Rogers, of course, the former Kurt Stallion. The finish here was a knee chop from behind by Stallion Rogers, cuts down Isaiah Moore, and then he hits him with, there might be controversy to the name of this move now. I don't even know what Stallion Rogers calls this move anymore. I don't know if he's changed the name over time. I've known it always as Ode to Luigi, which is Ode to Luigi from Mario Brothers, which is essentially Stallion Rogers runs headfirst like a missile, just like a flying head-to-head, just headbutt. But considering what's going on in the world right now, I don't know if you'd want to call it Ode to Luigi or not. just because of, you know, the Luigi in the news right now. But I mean, I don't know. A lot of people view him as a hero. A lot of people view him as a villain. I don't even want to get into all of that. This is not the show to talk about any of my thoughts on any of that stuff. But I'm only saying it because I think it's just kind of funny that I wrote down, you know, Ode to Luigi, but it's like, Anyways, running headbutt by Stallion Rogers takes out Isaiah Moore for the 1-2-3. After that, we had the AEW Women's title on the line. Sierra defends and retains over Holly Hood, Haley J. Y'all might know Holly Hood from the OVW documentary on Netflix from, I guess, from earlier this year, which I thought was really, really well done. Really enjoyed that. And it's cool to see Haley in more companies. You know, obviously she was most kind of well known for like OVW in that run from that documentary I just mentioned, but has been popping up in a whole bunch of companies. Has wrestled quite a bit for the NWA, for instance, getting more reps on the indies, you know, AEW being an example here. The finish of this one was towards the end, Haley is beating down Sierra with a kendo stick. Sierra eventually throws a chair to the head of Haley and then hits a backpack stunner. Instead of keeping her down for the three count, Sierra actually pulls Holly Hood's head off the mat. It pulls her up at two and then decides to lock in a cobra clutch, chokes Haley J out, and Sierra wins by technical submission via choke out. And once again, retains the AEW women's title. After that, we had the AEW tag team titles on the line. Russ Jones and Schaff defend and retain over Crash Jackson and Damian Chambers. The finish of this one was the running doomsday device by Schaff and Russ Jones onto Damian Chambers for the 1-2-3. And that is how it sounds. I did not Freudian slip that. Basically, Schaff and Jones do a running version of the doomsday device where they run across the ring from turnbuckle to turnbuckle before hitting the clothesline off the electric chair. So really cool looking stuff there from Jones and Schaff to retain their titles. After that, we had the AEW Heritage title on the line. Joe Alonzo defends and retains over Robert Anthony, but this is by, this is like a no contest. There wasn't actually a pinfall or submission. Basically, what winds up happening is the King of Chicago comes out and attacks the referee, you know, causing a, they call it a no contest. I think technically it's probably a disqualification, but nonetheless, Joe Alonzo gets out of there with his championship. Robert Anthony was cashing in a title opportunity for this as well. And the main event of the show, we have the AEW heavyweight title on the line. Matt Riddle defeats Big Beef Gnarls Garvin to become the new champion. The finish of this one was Garvin going for a clothesline. Riddle ducks, hits an RKO, and follows up with a bro stone to become the new AEW heavyweight champion. I know he's just talking about Riddle kind of quote-unquote finishing his story in MLW and becoming the MLW heavyweight champion soon. He already has AEW gold, and you know, I think he'll continue to win belts along the way too. I'm sure he's probably got, let me look at this cage match real quick and just see how many titles he currently has. So right now, he technically has two belts. He has the AEW heavyweight title and the BRCW tag team titles with Stallion Rogers. They've been the champions for 120 days plus. So that's pretty interesting to see, too, because Stallion Rogers was a someone who was mentored in his early career by Matt Riddle. Even though Rogers had probably been in wrestling longer or around the same amount of time as Riddle when I think about it, because Riddle obviously started kind of late comparatively just because he had his, you know, his UFC run, his MMA career before he even got into professional wrestling. But I remember Stallion Rogers and Curt Stallion having like a friendship on the indies before Stallion Rogers had his brief stint in WWE as Curt Stallion. I was trying to think of what they called him, but he actually was Curt Stallion. And that was an interesting thing too, because he was Curt Stallion on the indies, used the name Curt Stallion in WWE. They must have trademarked it or whatever along the way. And then when he left the WWE, he changed his name to Stallion Rogers. That's what he's been wrestling as ever since. But that's also just speculation. I don't know if that's exactly how things went down or not, or if he just wanted like a fresh start or whatever, I don't know. But nonetheless, Matt Riddle and Simon Rogers were both on this AEW show, and they're both currently tag team champions elsewhere. But here in AEW, we have Matt Riddle now as the heavyweight champion. So if you want to watch that show once again, it's available on highspots.com. That's AEW Windy City Classic. Moving on, got results for Game Changer Wrestling. This is GCW Take Care. That's spelled T-A-K-E-K-A-R-E. This show is from Washington Hall in Seattle, Washington. It's available on Triller TV Plus. I'm not an endorser or sponsor to tell you guys to go sign up for Triller TV Plus, but, you know, they do have a lot of great content over there, including the whole GCW catalog, their live shows. Speaking of GCW, I thought it was pretty cool to see at that MSG WWE show, there was a GCW box, and Fightful's own Sean Ross Sapp was there chilling with the GCW homies during the event, so that was very cool to see. And of course, GCW is heading strong into Hammerstein Ballroom coming up in just a few weeks. So I'll let y'all know when I know as far as like a review for that show. I don't know if Sean's going to want me just doing like results here on the Weekender, or if he's going to want me to do like a standalone show on the main YouTube or a Fightful Overbooked, or exactly how that's going to go down. Because that same night, we're going to have Impact Wrestling's Genesis, or TNA Wrestling's Genesis. And I usually do the TNA post shows for those, but since it's the same night, I'm not sure exactly how that's going to work out yet. But I will talk to Sean, I'll talk to Joel Cresta, we'll get that all figured out. But nonetheless, expect to see me either covering TNA soon on the main channel, or just keep a lookout, I might wind up doing both. It depends on how things work out, and, you know, kind of how they want to do this. They might not even want me doing the GCW results at all. You know, they might want someone else doing it. I don't even know. I got to find that out. But when I find that out, I'll let y'all know for sure. But that said, before I get into GCW results, I'm going to do some quick TNA predictions for 2025. We're not covering TNA right here, but, you know, since we do talk about the spoilers when they're available, and of course, once again, I cover the pay-per-views for the main channel, I'll say some random predictions for TNA next year. I don't think it's, like, anything crazy to predict, obviously, but I would say, you know, Nick Nemeth, I think, is going to be losing the TNA World Championship probably as early as Genesis to Joe Hendry. I feel like they've kind of missed the boat with Joe Hendry. He's still over, don't get me wrong, but I feel like he was really more, like, at his peak a few months back, almost half a year back already, honestly. But what I think is going to wind up happening, full disclosure, this is just my guess. I don't know anything inside. I'm just speculating, recklessly speculating. But my guess is that they're going to have Hendry win the TNA Championship so he can show up at the Royal Rumble as the TNA World Heavyweight Champion, similar to what we've seen in the past from Jordan Grace and Mickie James in the Women's Royal Rumbles. Now, do I think that Joe Hendry is going to be the TNA champion come the end of 2025? I do not. And that's mainly because I expect him to be full-time with NXT or WWE by then. So, who will be the champion at the end of 2025? That's a great question. I have no idea what Chris Bay's timeline is to come back, but I would like to see a strong push for him. I don't know if he'll be back in 2025, and I don't want to him to push anything. His health is obviously the most important thing overall, obviously. But maybe there's also opportunity there for them to, like, finally give a big singles push to Ace Austin, and maybe Chris Bay can be out there to, like, root him on throughout it or something. I just feel like TNA really needs to do a good job going forward of building their own stars. I've talked about this here and on the Spotlight recently when it comes to, like, Tessa Blanchard, for instance. People can have varying opinions on how they feel about Tessa on a personal level, and they feel about her on, like, professional and, like, in ring level and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of ways to look at the Tessa Blanchard situation. But at the end of the day, my honest opinion is more on, like, why would you even need to be in the position to make a move like that if you already are good at just building the stars you already have? Like, I feel like TNA feels like they need to go into desperation mode and sign Tessa because they're losing Jordan. They're probably losing Joe Hendry. They're losing Josh Alexander. They're losing a lot of big names, and they feel like, well, we'll bring in Tessa to try to fill that void. And it's like, well, that's a controversial figure. And, you know, you already have a really solid women's division and a solid men's division. I mean, they're losing Speedball Mike Bailey as well. They're losing a lot of people. But if they're doing a better job of kind of cultivating their own people, you would just be able to kind of plug and play. Like, they should have it ready to where, like, you know, they got a handful of people where, okay, you lose some people. Okay, we have people ready to go. You don't have to go outside of the company over and over and over again. And the honest truth is this. It really wouldn't matter outside of, like, maybe a CM Punk level person, like, you know, some massive household name in wrestling. No offense to Dolph Ziggler, but I mean, me and Jeremy talked about this on the spotlight too. Even like someone like Dolph Ziggler, who had all this good faith with the wrestling audience and was on WWE TV for over a decade and all this stuff, goes to TNA, and it's not like he went there and flopped. I'm not saying it wasn't successful, him being there, but it's not like their ratings spiked or they have like this whole new level of viewership or anything like that. And it's like, if you're not going to get that out of, you know, like Dolph, how do you think that like Tessa is going to help you like that? You know what I mean? It's just, if anything, you might turn people away from the show because they don't want to support her and stuff like that. So anyway, as far as like, you know, predictions for TNA for 2025, you know, I think for sure Josh Alexander's leaving. I mean, unless he gets like an offer he just cannot refuse to come back to TNA, I think he's as good as gone. I don't know as far as like the women, the women, I think, have a great division, and I love Masha Slamovich, and I hope that she continues to be the champion. But I also feel like the same kind of thing's going to happen to her that happened with Jordynne Grace, where, you know, if Masha starts popping up on NXT, for instance, that fan base is going to absolutely love her, and, you know, she'll be as good as gone from TNA as well onto bigger and better things and stuff. You know what I mean? So part of me wants to predict Masha Slamovich will be the Knockouts champion all the way through 2025, but part of me is also like, I have no idea what her deal looks like, and will she be in a bigger company by the end of the year? You know, I don't know. It's just really hard to predict when it comes to certain companies like that, but I do hope success for TNA. I really do. I think there's a lot of really, really talented people in that company, and you know, I'm pulling for them to succeed. So a couple just random predictions there for TNA. As far as GCW goes, this is Take Care from Washington Hall in Seattle, Washington. First match we had was Effie over Marcus Mathers. The finish of this one was Mathers going for his second rope destroyer, but he gets caught midair by Effie and hit with a TKO, basically like the fireman's carry into the cutter. And then Effie follows up with a sack rider for the 1-2-3. Effie, of course, heading to Hammerstein to take on Alley Cash, with the winner of that match taking on Mance Warner for the GCW World Championship. Speaking of Alley Cash, the next match was Alley Cash versus Viva Van. This ends in no contest. Well, technically, probably should be called disqualification, but I think it's ruled a no contest. But nonetheless, the finish here was Alley Cash hitting multiple pussy pile drivers onto Viva, and then she's like pulling her up at two. So, like, you know, she could easily get the 1-2-3, but she's prolonging the attack. And then Alley Cash decides to just grab a chair and hit the referee with a pussy pile driver. So, you know, that's the end of that one. Effie, who's on commentary during the match, comes out and makes a save for the ref. The two of them brawl, and they're broken up by a bunch of referees and security and stuff. So, you know, once again, a lot of history between Effie and Alley Catch, the former Bussy teammates. And I've said it before, I'll say it again for any new listeners. My prediction for this, you know, I'm doing a lot of predictions today, obviously, but for Hammerstein specifically, I think Effie defeats Alley Catch, and then Effie defeats Mance Warner to become the GCW World Champion at Hammerstein. Now, the big X factor in all of that is, of course, Cole Radrick, who still has the brass ring. There's always the possibility that some shenanigans take place at Hammerstein, and maybe Violence is Forever defeats the Garbage Daddies to retain the tag titles, and then right away, Cole could cash in the brass ring and get another immediate title shot and wind up beating VIF for the tag titles. But, you know, I'm a Cole Radrick guy. I talk about that ad nauseum. Y'all all know that at this point. But, you know, I'd love to see a scenario where Cole Roderick and Alec Price have a solid run with the tag team titles, and then Cole goes on to become the heavyweight champion at some point. But there's the other side of me that, you know, Violence is Forever is my favorite tag team in the world, and I don't want to see them lose the titles to anybody. So, perfect scenario for me would be Violence is Forever actually defeats the Garbage Daddies to retain the titles at Hammerstein, and then later in the show, Cole Roderick cashes in to become the world champion, or he holds on to that longer and becomes a world champion randomly sometime in 2025. Alright, well, that all said, next match we had was a tag team match where Janelicious, the team of Joey Janela and Megan Bain, defeat the Bollywood Boys. The finish of this one was Janela hitting a Death Valley driver and then Janelicious hitting a Doomsday device for the 1-2-3. Of course, heading into Hammerstein. Almost said Hammerstone. I hope Hammerstone, by the way, gets healthy soon. I saw that underwent surgery, so that's actually, didn't even mean to bring that up today, but, you know, thoughts out there to Hammerstone, Alexander Hammerstone. Hopefully see a fast, speedy recovery and get right back out there on TNA TV and maybe other places too, who knows. There's so much Forbidden Door stuff going on in the world of wrestling right now. You never know where people are going to pop up, but, you know, maybe, you know, Hammerstone, of course, himself being a former MLW World Heavyweight Champion, maybe Hammerstone is the one when he comes back from injury, gets a big push. Maybe he winds up becoming the TNA champion by 2025. Who knows? A lot of possibilities out there in the world of wrestling. But at Hammerstein, Joey Janela is going to be taking on Masato Tanaka in an absolute dream match for all of us old school ECW fans. But I'm still not sure what Megan Bain's doing. I don't know if they've announced it and I've just missed it, but I would fully expect Megan Bain to be a part of the show. She's on a lot of the promos and that kind of stuff. And of course, Janelicious being pretty heavily pushed as a tag team. So interested to see what Megan Bain does at Hammerstein. After that, we had Guillermo Rosas over Cody Chun. This is the team of C4, both members going at it one-on-one in a friendly matchup of tag team members. I've seen C4 wrestle live many times here in Atlanta for companies like Battle Slam. And, you know, they wrestled in AEW as well. They've wrestled really all over the place, a lot like on the West Coast. So, you know, it's cool to see those guys get more and more reps in GCW, whether it's in singles or tag team, because they're both very talented, in my opinion. The finish of this one was both guys trading La Maestra cradle attempts, and eventually Rosas just, like, sticks Chun when he's going for his La Maestra, just gets his shoulders stuck on the mat, does kind of almost like a crucifix-type pin, and gets the 1-2-3. After the match, both guys hug, as there's no hard feelings. Once again, they are a very solid tag team. After that, we had a Bloodsport match. So this is Bloodsport rules, you know, no ropes, MMA style, work shoot style, whatever you want to call it. We had Josh Barnett over one called Manders. Manders wrestled in his normal wrestling gear, like his cowboy boots came out with, like, his, you know, cowboy hat and vest and everything. And I believe, especially based on what Barnett said after the match on the microphone, it sounded like Manders wasn't, like, the original intended opponent, but he stepped up to the plate and knocked it out of the park, as Manders always does. You know, Manders deserves so much credit for, you know, all the stuff he does all across the wrestling world. He's a consistent member of GCW, longtime member of the second gear crew, you know, longtime part of Major League Wrestling, you know, a real, like, warrior of the indies, like a guy who might make more trips and put more miles on his vehicle than anyone in the wrestling business, potentially. Wrestles absolutely everywhere. Had a really solid run with the Action Wrestling World Championship before losing it to Bobby Flacco a few months back. So, I mean, Manders deserves so much credit, and he's so versatile, and he's a guy who, you know, can just jump right in there and have a Bloodsport match against someone like Josh Barnett, who literally is, like, the namesake of the current Bloodsport product. It was originally Matt Riddle's Bloodsport. People forget that, but, you know, Josh Barnett, of course, took that over years back and has been running strong with it. The finish of this Bloodsport fight between Barnett and Manders, basically what winds up happening is Barnett locks on a Fujiwara armbar and Manders rolls through it. And after the roll through, Barnett rolls that pretty much right into a bulldog choke. And Manders, I believe Manders passed out. I don't think that they tapped. I think they passed out. I can't remember, to be completely honest, though. Manders was kind of, like, hanging out, like, half outside of the ring, too. So this was a nice finish. And after the match, Barnett said really good things about Manders and officially invited him to like do an actual Bloodsport event. He was very impressed by his ability to step up in that one. After that, we had Gringo Loco over Rich Swann. The finish of this one was a base bomb from the top rope for the 1-2-3. The only issue I have with Gringo Loco and the base bomb, the only thing is it takes a very specific setup to do that move, so like you always see it coming. Like even in this match, it didn't come off exactly how it was supposed to, so they had to like reset up for it. But that said, it always gets a massive reaction, and you can see it in the faces of the people in the crowd, where like especially the people who haven't seen that move before, they're always totally mind blown. So I'm not saying like he shouldn't be doing the move or anything like that. It's just when you've seen him do it, you know, for years at this point, it's just like a very specific type of setup that you could really see coming from a mile away, but it's always a very impressive move nonetheless. So Gringo Loco with the win over Rich Swann. After that, we had Dark Sheik over Terra Zepp. The finish of this one was Sheik hitting a powerbomb through a door bridge and then coming off the top rope with a top rope leg drop. Sheik gets the 1-2-3. After that, we had Super Crazy, ECW legend, who's of course going to be part of GCW Hammerstein. He defeats Broski Jimmy Lloyd. The finish of this one was Super Crazy missing a second rope moonsault, and then when Broski tries to capitalize, Super Crazy does a victory roll and pins Jimmy for the 1-2-3. And the main event of the show, we had the GCW World title on the line. Mance Warner defends and retains over Masha Slamovich. Slamovich, of course, the current reigning defending TNA Knockouts champion, as I mentioned earlier, but also current reigning defending JCW Jersey Championship Wrestling World Champion. So this was champion versus champion with just Warner's title on the line. Masha, of course, though, a former GCW World Champion in her own right. Finish of this one was Slamovich gets the upper hand, almost gets the job done towards the end with like a nice shining wizard. This is a bloody, brutal match, a really, really good match between these two. A lot of great storytelling in this one. The finish was basically Slamovich locking in a rear naked choke. Warner grabs a screwdriver, which has been his weapon of choice for his entire heel run. He grabs a screwdriver out of his boot and pops Masha in the face with it, and then winds up hitting her in the head with it again, and then repeatedly just stabs her in the head with the screwdriver, follows up with the implant DDT, which MLJ called the big-ass DDT on commentary. I don't know if I've heard it referred to as the big-ass DDT, or if you know, ML's just being Emil and he's just calling that because he was feeling it. And I love MLJ, by the way. For those of you who don't know, MLJ actually does the intro for the spotlight that me and Jeremy do on Thursdays. Like the intro for that show is his voice introducing us. Got nothing but love for, you know, one of the best in the game, MLJ. But he called it the big ass DDT, so I'll keep an ear out to see if they continue to call it that. But you know, the lifting DDT, implant DDT, whatever you want to call it, impaler DDT, there's a lot of names for it. Call it the big ass DDT. Mance Warner retains the championship. So I gave you some GCW predictions a second ago. I'll go over to JCW prediction real quick since I'm talking about Masha. I think by the end of 2025, the JCW world champion will be Griffin McCoy. So mark that one down. I think Griffin has done incredibly solid work for a while now in JCW. I hope Jordan Oliver is back soon because, you know, he had a great feud with Jordan. And they can continue to pick that up at JCW. Jordan Oliver, of course, was a JCW champion before losing to Slamovich during the J Cup. But, yeah, that's my prediction for JCW. My big one for next year is that 2025, the champion at the end of 2025 will be Griffin McCoy. Don't know if he'll be the one to beat Masha, but somehow, some way, Griffin McCoy will actually become the JCW world champion in 2025, in my opinion. Any other predictions that I've got? I'll do full-on GCW Hammerstein predictions for the People vs. GCW a little closer to the event. So we'll wait on those predictions till a little bit later. Last set of results we got here. We got the final episode of NXT Level Up. This show was from December 27th. It was available on Peacock. End of an era. I'm going to give you the results for these matches, and then I'll give you some final thoughts on the show, and we'll get on out of here. So, NXT Level Up results for the last episode. First match we had was Layla Diggs, Carly Bright, and Kendall Gray over Lainey Reed, Wendy Chu, and Kaylee Armstrong. The finish of this one was Diggs hitting Reed with a pump kick and then a axe kick for the 1-2-3 for her team. After that, we had the only other match, but it was a gauntlet match where Dante Chen had to take on three people that, you know, he didn't know who was going to be ahead of time. So, and of course, Dante Chen, known as the gatekeeper of NXT, which, you know, is very fitting that he would basically be like the final boss here for the last ever match of NXT, him versus three unnamed opponents. So the first opponent for Dante Chen is Keanu Carver. The finish of this one is Carver getting sent into the turnbuckles chest first and then gets rolled up for the 1-2-3. After the match, Carver hits a sky high onto Chen. So Chen is, you know, hurting heading into his second matchup, which is against Harlem Lewis. The finish of this one was Lewis going for a pin, and there's like a roll through from the pin. And after the roll through, Dante Chen lands his Chental Touch, which I always call the Hadouken, the Chental Touch by Dante Chen to Harlem Lewis to get to the third and final match of this gauntlet and of NXT Level Up's existence. We had Dante Chen over Cale Dixon. The finish here was a pump kick followed up by the Chental Touch for the 1-2-3. Dante Chen gets a nice ovation from the NXT Level Up audience, and he stands tall as basically the final boss and the winner of NXT Level Up. Like, if you could crown an NXT Level Up champion, it would be Dante Chen. As far as like what this show was set out to accomplish, I think he was probably the best example of it. You know, I talked about it, you know, for years right here on this show, covering Level Up week by week by week. I always thoroughly enjoyed the show. I think it served its purpose. I think it did a good job of, you know, basically helping get reps for performers who needed to work in front of an audience and to learn and to grow. People went from having no moveset, no gear, no swag, no anything, no gimmick, whatever, like, you know, to finding themselves. And some of them have had success on other brands, and some that I think they're going to really have a lot of future success. Like, for instance, Hank and Tank, we covered a lot on Level Up, and I think that those guys are future WWE Raw or SmackDown tag team champions. I really do. I think they should be in the company for a long, long time and be super successful. There's a lot of people that we've seen come through Level Up, male, female, of all genders, like Karin Petrovic. We saw her, you know, a while back, and it was like, wow, she's impressive. I think she'll probably go somewhere. Sol Ruka, same type of thing. I mean, there's so many. Tiffany Stratton, I mean, started on Level Up when we were talking about her. It was a good place for, you know, people like members of Gallus to, you know, continue to do something that mattered to any degree, right? I mean, just like, you know, you knew when Gallus came on the show that you were going to have a good match and they were probably going to help make their opponents better in the long run. You know, I can talk on and on. I mean, Uriah Connors, it was cool seeing him, the former Brogan Finley, come from the indie scene and then, you know, start having success, even though it took a while for his team to start getting wins. And, you know, but I think guys, you know, like Cale Dixon, and even, you know, there's a ton of people that I think just have a ton of potential. And it was good that we got to see them grow on Level Up. You know, Dante Chen, I think, once again, the best example of the entire show. A guy who, when we first saw him, had no moveset, had nothing, really. He was a creator wrestler, like so many of them were, just a generic creator wrestler who needed to find his way. And he won over that audience. He had good matches. He's got a good look. He's very athletic. It seems like he's a good learner, you know, and he just went out there and kept getting better and better and became kind of the face of the brand. And all I can hope for guys like Dante Chen and, you know, so many of the other performers is that they get a real shot. You know, hopefully they get a real chance on the main NXT show. And if not there, hopefully there's a spot for them to get a chance on Raw or SmackDown at some point as well. So, you know, although NXT Level Up is going away, I think it's an interesting time in the WWE because obviously you have the WWE ID system now where they're kind of going that route when it comes to independent talent. They can continue to, you know, kind of prepare their athletes who are becoming wrestlers through the Performance Center, through other means. Maybe Level Up will come back and maybe it'll become called something different, or maybe You know, maybe this isn't really the end of all of it, and they just need to kind of figure out distribution. But what we do know is this isn't on Peacock anymore, and we don't think it's going to be around for the foreseeable future. But, you know, I was a supporter of NXT Level Up. I legitimately was, and I think it served its purpose. So that's going to be it for this episode of the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. I've been Steven Jensen. Please hit the like button here on FightfulSelect.com. Please follow me on X at FightTalk _. Please use code FightTalk at IndependentWrestling.tv. And please watch The Spotlight every Thursday morning, 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time on Fightful Overbooked, me and Jeremy. My Minnesota Vikings won earlier today. Didn't even talk about that, but we are 14-2 next week. Vikings versus Lions. Huge game for the division and the one seed in the NFC. And also, full disclosure, I may or may not have put some money on some of these things happening before the season when the odds were really, really, really unlikely. So wish me luck, and next episode of the Weekender will probably be on Sunday, but it's all going to depend on when the Vikings play the Lions, because they're going to make that a featured game, so I don't know if that's going to be like a Sunday night game, or if they'll move it to Monday, or exactly how that's all going to work, but stay tuned for the next episode of the Fightful Select Weekender podcast. It'll be either next Sunday or next Monday. Till next weekend, enjoy some professional wrestling. I've been Steven Jensen, Skol Vikings, and Happy New Year.